Yes, you're at Eagle FM, the Eye. Welcome to your favorite radio station in town. Actually, not in town, in the land. No, in the world. So good morning to you, wherever you find yourself this morning. How is your morning so far? It's a Tuesday morning. It's the 28th of October, and the year is 2025. There's only 5 years to Vision 2030. How far are we, you know, from achieving all our visions? All right. Good morning. And also, how far are you from achieving your own personal vision? Good morning to you, and welcome to your favorite radio stations, your number one talk radio station, 24/7. Thank you, David, for the early morning scoop. And we continue in the same vein. So welcome to Unpacking the Day. And my name is Mike Oshoveli, and this is Unpacking the Day, your daily dose of what is really going on in business, economics, and politics. Every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, the trends, the numbers making headlines. And we keep it clear. Here we keep it clear, a little witty, and always curious, asking the questions that matter and giving you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. Now, the views shared during our segment don't necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM. We are here to unpack what others are saying, spark meaningful conversation, so you can be part of the bigger conversations. This is your space to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of stories. So if you're just joining us, if you're just tuning in, welcome. It's nice to have you. Thanks for choosing Eagle FM this morning to be in your company. And it's always a pleasure for us. It's always a pleasure for us to be in your company. And it's good to have you with us at this morning. And we're coming to you live from the Ondangwa studio. So the mic now is in the hands of the big mic. So thanks for joining me. And I will be with you until the hour of 10 o'clock. So when we will be handing over again the mic to, you know, to Vintuk again, to Mr. Franz coming with Kutha Mosha. So that will be later. So for now, as usual, we always want to find out what happened on this day in Africa. So what are some of the significant events that happened in the course of history on this day in Africa? So now on the 28th of October, you know, in 1889, the first ever newspaper in the region of sub-Saharan Africa, so, was published. Can you guess what was the first ever newspaper in the region of sub-Saharan Africa was published? In which country actually was that? It was in Nigeria, the Lagos Weekly Record. So the Lagos Weekly Record in Nigeria was established, making the significant milestone in African media history. So this was a time when print media began playing a crucial role in spreading ideas, including political and social change, and help lay the foundation for modern African journalism. So, Lagos Weekly Record was established on October 28, 1889. And on October 28, 1974, the Ethiopian underwent a significant political upheaval. So this was the day the Ethiopian monarch was officially abolished. So the overthrow of the emperor Haile Selassie marked the beginning of the Derg regime, a communist government that led to a country that led the country into a period of instability and much conflict. So the revolution led to a widespread changes, including land redistribution and the establishment of socialist government. Although it also resulted in a violence, and the eventual rise of famine, you know, that we knew that was associated with Ethiopia, and civil war in the years that that followed. Now, coming closer to the SADC on this date, the Angolan War for Independence reached a critical point, particularly as peace negotiation became more concrete. Angola was officially gained independence from Portuguese colonial rule on November 11, 1975, but the political and military struggle leading up to this point was fierce and included a significant international tension. Now, on October 28 was one of the last key moments of pre-independence political activities. So, and on the very same day, 2021, researchers announced the name of the new human ancestor species, Homo bodoensis. I don't know how you pronounce that. Homo bodoensis. So, from Africa. So, the dating to the middle Pleistocene, about half a million years ago, identifies as the direct ancestor of modern humans. So, Homo bodoensis was actually announced that it's a new human ancestor species. So, and it was identified as the direct ancestor of modern human. All right. So basically, those are some of the significant events that took place in the course of history in Africa on this particular day. And on this day, let's have a day that something that will inspire our day today, the thought for the day. So no one is without knowledge except he who asks no questions. So the proverb means that everyone has some knowledge or understanding, but the key to gaining more knowledge is to be curious and ask questions. What we do here. So it emphasizes that asking question is essential for learning, growth, and avoiding ignorance. Now, those who do not ask questions limit themselves and especially remain without knowledge because they do not seek to understand or learn more. So, the Proverbs encourage inquisitiveness as a path now to wisdom, highlighting that knowledge is accessible to those who actively pursue it by seeking answers and clarification. So, it also implies that humility in admitting to what one does not know and the willingness to acquire are vital traits for acquiring true knowledge. So, in essence, knowledge is not fixed or innate, but expanded through questioning and learning from others. So, that's our thought for the day, that knowledge, no one is without knowledge except he who asks. No questions. Hopefully, well, you start asking questions, you know, today. Make sure that you ask questions to gain knowledge, you know, seek knowledge by asking questions. So that's our thought for the day, Tuesday, October the 28th. So welcome and thanks for joining me this morning. So I hope we're going to have a very, very, very informative and discussion and debate time. So that's what we do here. So thanks for coming through. All right. So what do we have in the show this morning? So northern regions could face serious water shortage in the coming weeks. So that's a notice from the from NamWater that the northern region could actually face a serious water shortages in the coming weeks. We look at that. And food, the other story that we can look at, where all this coming from? It's another different topic that I'm not. Oh my good Lord. So other topic that we're looking at is that, oh my goodness, is Africa's 125 billion barrel of oil at risk of becoming worthless? So that's another story that we're going to look at. And if we have time, so there's another story that we didn't look at yesterday. And sometimes, you know, only if we have time. So the other stories that we may look at well is that South Africa exit the FATF grade list. And we ask the question what that means for Namibia. So we may look at that because yesterday we actually, because, you know, your participation. And of course, your participation will also be part of the show this morning. So make sure that you come through at one point after each of the story that we covered. So you are part of this. So good morning and stay tuned. We will be back after this.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omutiha kutekirwa kakuna ii matina omjo. Chikawa shafata na nana nongeshefa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyawo ota ingongo tatamweni. Anageshefa ya Namibia omvitombwa na wa onjika. Seitha nina omayakuro ni randitomwa yoye yongeshefa yoye kupitiramo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende kuimeneha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimopo yomo programa letu. Moambo lengira selma kodara heta tuimu. Datu heari hamano tano oliyaj. Eagle FM.
That's right. This is Eagle FM. If you're just joining us, you are on Eagle FM and this is Unpacking the Day and you're just right on time. So good morning to you and good morning to Namibia. Good morning to this land of the brave and welcome to Unpacking the Day right here on Eagle FM, your trusted voice of reason, your trusted voice of reason and debate. So, and I'm Mike Oshoveli. So, NamWater. So let's start with these stories and then we get to the other stories, which actually the main story of the... So this is very interesting. That's why I want to start with this one. NamWater has warned the North regions, the Oshana or Shikoto or Hangwena and Omsati, the four O's, the four O's region, they could actually face a serious water shortages in the coming weeks. Okay? So this is a story actually in the daily newspaper. So the official line is surface water level have dropped. Surface water level have dropped. Demand is rising. And ongoing work on the Ohangwena Aquifer project might make things worse before they get actually better. So we go to the market and we'll be back.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the U in UNAM is you.
Yes, definitely. So when you are in UNAM, you will know that this is you, you know? All right. I love that, that tagline, you know? So, all right. The official line. So we're talking about Namwata. Actually, you know, giving you some kind of a notice warning, that, well, there's a possibility there could be, the northern region could actually face, water shortages in the coming weeks. These are Oshana, Oshikoto, Angwena, and Omsanti. So, now, and the official line, why this is the case, because surface water levels has dropped, you know, and demand is rising, and ongoing work now on the aquifer, the Angwena aquifer project, might make things a little bit worse, you know, before they get better. That's what they say. Now, this is not just about, when you look at the whole story, it's not just about water shortage, really. I mean, I'm getting now into unpacking. So it's not just about water shortage. It's about, when you look at the whole story, it's about planning. It's about accountability. Could be climate as well. We're going to look at that. And maybe, just maybe, how much of this shortage, I'm putting that in actually in brackets, in inverted comma. So, and how much of this shortage could have been avoided? All right? So, you and I, let's unpack this a little bit deeper, okay? So, now, first, let's have some background. Namwata says surface water from rain, surface water from the rainfall has declined. And as we heed into the festive season, now, as we heed into the festive seasons, when demand, you know, in the festive seasons in the north, you know, the demand goes up, the demands typically spikes, or demand of water actually typically spike, increases. Supply, they say, might not meet demand. You know, the supply of water might not actually meet the demand. That definitely would affect, you know, households. It would affect schools, to affect hospitals, to affect small business, it affect businesses, you know. And everything from the hair salon in Ongwediva, you know, to the cattle farmers, to a cattle farmer in Okahao. Are there farmers in Okahao? Yeah. Cattle farm in Okahao. Oh, Congo. In the region of Mr., you know. So, or in Okongo. So it will definitely, it will affect everything from, you know, from smaller businesses to, you know, to small scale farmers and farmers in the regions, in those regions. So now, Angwena seemed to, you know, to come off worse with the aquifer integration still underway. So Namwata assures everyone now that long-term fixes are coming. Long-term fixes are coming. The Oshakati and Otapi treatment plants, for example, are still under construction. So they're still under construction. And also, the president has also weighed in, calling for sustainable water management and praising industries investing in water-saving technologies like Nambrew. So, sounds reasonable, isn't it? You know? So, but let's pause here, because not everyone is convinced. Not everyone is thinking, all right, that makes sense. Well, including me, including you as well. This is unpacking the day after all. All right. Now, according to the article, an independent meteorologist, Vilho Ndeunyema, says, hold on a little bit. Just hold on. This doesn't add up. All right. Really? This doesn't add up. Namibia had above average rainfall this year. In fact, Namwata itself, almost every month or every week, Namwata itself said earlier that dams were full. There's always dams bulletin, you know? There's always a dams bulletin. that NAMWATA themselves, they said early dams. They said earlier that dams were full, isn't it? I hope you have heard it. I hope you have read it. Now, so how do we go from dams are full to water shortage in a less than a year? Huh? How can someone answer that? How do we? And I'm not the only one asking this. Real hot Devyama also asked that. How, you know? So he said, well, hold on. Come on. Something is not adding up. How do we move? Really, how do we go from dams are full to just in a matter of 1 year, there is now a wattage, there is water shortages? In less than a year. Now, you have to think, is this really a climate problem? Is this really a climate problem, or is it maybe, just maybe, a management problem? Now, guys, so let's call a spade, okay? If the rain was good and then dams were full, then something's, you know, is wrong with how the water is either stored, treated, or distributed. So you understand? Either of those, how you store water, how you treat water, how you distribute water, somewhere, somehow, you know, something is wrong somewhere. So, and the reason why I'm saying that is not the first time this had happened, actually. So remember the 2019, you know, remember the 2019, the Kuvelai system struggled back then too. So the pipelines clogged, reservoirs empty, and the people had to queue up with containers, you know, for water. So the water has to be rationed. So it seems like we are stuck in the same loop. Rain comes, we celebrate, you know, like, yeah, we celebrate. Where to say, well, dams are full, we celebrate. And then a few months later, the taps run dry again. That's not weather. That's actually poor planning. That's absolutely poor planning. So, now, and let's talk about the infrastructure, all right? So, because that's something that now we have heard. If you follow the story that we were listening to Anna Kreta and the Minister Sankwasa when he was in Rundu. So, you remember what happened there? Now, let's get to that. Let's talk about the infrastructure. The Ohangwena Aquifer Project was supposed to be, how do they say it now? So there is a word that they use now, a game changer. So was supposed to be a game changer, a deep underground water sources promising long-term stability, but it is still pre-commissioning. So it's still pre-commissioning. Now, the other thing is that, meanwhile, population growth in the north, just as like we were talking in Rundu, the population in the north, the population growth in the north is outpacing infrastructure upgrades. They are outpacing. Towns like Ongwediva or Shakati have grown rapidly with more people, more business, and higher demand. But the pipes and the reservoir, the pipe and the reservoirs still catching up. It's still catching up. So the population growth in the north have outpaced the infrastructure upgrade. The upgrading of infrastructure has not actually, you know, go hand in hand as the population grow in these towns. And here's the issue now. NAMWATA calls for conservation, you know, which is fair. No, that's fair. I'm not digging that. So that's fair. The responsibility can't rest only, but we have to understand that the responsibility can't rest only on the ordinary citizens. So it is not enough to tell people to use less water when you have now, when you have a lot of leaks, aging pipes, and poor storage capacities. Eh? And all these are wasting thousands of liters daily. Eh? I can take you even to some areas where the water is just, you know, leaking, aging pipes. So you're asking people, okay, people must have to conceive. Yes. And I said that is actually fair. But there's also, you know, but there's also a lot of waste there. Wasting thousands of liters daily. And these actually are being wasted before even they reach the taps. Eh? This is waste of water before they reach actually the residents, you know, taps. So if the average person uses about 100 liters a day, imagine what loss through leaks and outdated infrastructures. And studies have shown that up to 30% of the Namibian piped water is lost before it even used. That's like pouring a third of our water down the drain, literally. Huh? Now, of course we know Namibia is the driest country south of the Sahara. No, that's a fact. And climate change isn't making it any easier. It doesn't make it any easier. And rainfall is more unpredictable. And temperature, as we see, you know, we are the one now, as we speak, we are the one on the brightest end. You know, we are the one who are being bright here at this part and this part of the world. So, Oshetrigo Blystender, babe, you know, we are the one who are being bright by the sun. So the temperature is rising as well. And the funny thing is this, you know, and even our leaders, let's say, for example, ministers, and they talk about this. Okay, the rainfall is more unpredictable. Erratic nature of our rain now, you know, of drought that they talk about that. But this is also where planning matter most. Eh? This is also where planning matter most. We can't rely on the rain anymore. So we can't rely on how the rain used to. Now, and we're talking about that is unpredictable. We know that we cannot rely on the rain anymore. We need system that stores, that recycle, that reuses water efficiently. We cannot just go on crying. Yeah, it's unpredictable. It's erratic, you know, drought that we got. Eh? So this, we need to plan better. This is when our planning matter most. And I said, we can't rely on rain anymore in the way it used to be. And what does that need? We need system that restore, recycle, reuse, you know, water efficiently. Now, we have an example. Take Windhoek for an example. Eh? Take Windhoek for an example. So, one of the first cities, this is one of the first cities in the world to recycle water waste for human consumption. Windhoek is one of the first cities in the world to recycle water waste for human consumption. It is not perfect, but it works. We go to the market.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
So welcome back. So I'm talking about keep crying about unpredictable, you know, rainfall and climate change. And I'm saying, yes, then we need to start actually planning better. This is where now planning become, you know, it's mattermost, you know. So because we cannot, as we see now, we see the patterns of rain, you cannot, it's not reliable. So we then, so we know that we cannot rely on rain anymore. So we need now system that now help us to store, to recycle, and also maybe to reuse water. And I was given just an example that the example of Windhoek. Windhoek is one of the cities in the world to recycle wastewater for human consumption. Well, thank God I'm not in Windhoek. Yeah. So, as I said, it is not perfect. It is not perfect, but it works. It does work. So why not replicate that in the north or anywhere else? Why not replicate that, especially in the fast-growing towns? So we have an example of Rundu where this is the case. Why not replicate that there? Why not replicate that in the north or anywhere else where this is, where the fast-growing towns are happening? So let's also talk about accountability, okay? Are we investing enough in a local level water management? Or are we waiting for, mostly for national project to save the day? So I just feel that locally also, we are not, you know, investing enough in a local level water management. Because project like, the project like Otapi treatment plant, that have been under construction for years. Every delay has a human cost. Believe me, every delay has a human cost. Children missing school to fetch waters. Farmers losing livestock. Clinics struggling to stay sanitary. And believe me, this is not just about water. It's about dignity. It's about health. It's about development. Without water, there will be no development. Yesterday we talked about electricity. There will be no development. These two commodities are very, these two elements are very important. So, you can't talk development without water. Definitely not. And let's also talk politics of water. Of course, there are also political angle. There's also a political angle. You know, on water. Yes, for us, water shortage make headlines. But they also make a political talking point. They also make a political talking point. When the president talks about sustainable water management, she's right. She's right. But we should also ask, how are national policies, how are national policies translating into a real outcome for rural communities? How are, and I'm going to come to an example, how are the national policies translating into a real outcome for national for rural communities? So I have looked at, for example, and go and check your NDPs. For example, the last one, we have in the sixth now, the fifth national development plan promises a universal water access. By what year? The fifth national development, the NDP-5, promised a universal water access by what year? 2022. Where are we now? We are in 2025. So we are in 2025. People in Ohangwena, Omsati, are queuing at communal taps. Do you know what is a universal water access mean? It means that everybody in this country have access to potable water, coming from the tap, clean water. Now, who is accountable for when the policies hadn't met the reality? Our NDP-5, universal access to water, universal water access in 2022. It didn't happen. And who is accountable? And let's not forget industries, okay? Let's not forget. Industry, someone said this yesterday about electricity. Industry get water first because they pay more. that brewer visit mentioned in the articles, you know, it's a great PR, but it raises question about priorities as well. A household expected to use water sparingly, while industry get the lion's share of, you know, they get the lion's share because they contribute to the GDP. So that's why it's a whole question of priorities. Yeah? Well, this is not anti-business. I'm not trying to be anti-business. It's about fairness. Water is a right. Yeah? Water is a right, not a privilege. And that's why universal access to water. Water, universal water access. So in 22 that we said, it's water is a right, not a privilege. So what can be done practically, you know? We need transparency, you know? So when we hear, you know, we need that real-time data on dam levels and supply schedules so community can plan ahead. We need to. So we still think that, well, our dams are still full. Yeah? The other thing is also local council. Local councils should invest in rainwater harvesting system. Small-scale community-based, yeah? And affordable. Small-scale. Every school, maybe, and clinic could have a tank on site. So, and there should be also, when we talk about awareness campaign, must go beyond slogan. So people need practical tips, how to fix household leaks, reuse gray water, protect, you know, boreholes, how we can protect our boreholes from contaminations, you know, those kind of things. And we need innovation. Innovation. Imagine if Northern Namibia became a leader in solar powered desalination. The solar power. You know, a desalination in the north, a community water recycling, or a community water recycling. Imagine, it is possible. We just need the will. We just need the will and the right leadership. Eh? So, yes, you may come. You were knocking on my door earlier, so you may come now through. So, yeah. So, just kind of to put it together as, you know, and tonight as you pour that last glass of water before bed, you know, think about where it came from and how easily that supply chain can break down. All right? So you can still come through. Our telephone number, 0833-66091.
Eagle FM, welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Maika.
Yebo.
Wararabu.
Wararabu kumi.
Wararabu na.
Nyomura hapo ndishi.
Yee.
Yeah.
Andiro mwere tate warenge kutransfer uye kovenduka.
Ndini ngeche kovenduka nga nandiro
kubi. Uye unmomea. Uye unmomea.
No, nandiro kubi mea eni mjoka kani.
Andiro mwere. Kujae mai kana zeko hoya unmomea. Miangano mato enga.
Meni mea eni mjoka. I'm not gonna come and drink. And you know, when I come in Windhoek, I don't drink that water. I always buy a bottled water.
Yeah, a lot of people does.
Seriously.
Yeah. While you are there, this year we received a lot of good rains in Windhoek. And I have observed it for so long. I think we have three dam, or one from Dutch, or whatever. I mean, this one, yeah. But we drink the recycled water.
Yeah.
If you are familiar with Windhoek, there's Koriakap Dam.
Yeah.
All the raining water flows toward that dam. Now, that dam does not have capacity to hold water.
Uh-huh.
So, a lot of water flows out when that dam is when that dam is full.
When it's full, actually, then it flows out.
Yeah. Mm. So I was now talking with one of my friends, say, because we tried to, after 2 weeks the rain has stopped. We tried to go that road because there's a road behind that goes to Ochomwese.
Mm.
It is a gravel road. Now you go across that lever of that dam. We realize we cannot cross that water using the car, but we were having a back here for before, but we realize that water's levels, it comes to the window.
Yeah.
And then I said, with that levels, you cannot cross. But the rain has already stopped for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So that water runs from that side of, Ronald Varies and all those things. So it comes from far.
Mm.
And that river goes up to Swakop River. You know...
The one that comes from Okahanja side, yeah.
Yeah, of course, that one. And I was thinking, if the municipality... You see, we are drinking recycled water.
Yeah.
If the municipality can create another dam to hold or even increase the capacities of Korea Hub Dam, then we can make use of this water, and then the recycled water can be used for construction and also for planting agriculture things or something like that. Why are we not doing that?
Mm.
You see, this is what comes to my mind, and I think I put it also on the group.
It's management problem, I feel.
My friend.
Yeah. And planning. Hmm? And as it's not long, long time ago when we actually, where do we read it?
And you know, these are raining, this is raining water. It doesn't need a lot of preparation.
It doesn't.
It doesn't. It's raining water.
Where do we read it? Is it from the economist where we read this bulletin, dam bulletin all the time? So it's not long it's not long ago the dams are full. and now you're told dams are, you know,
are empty.
Yeah? Water shortages, you know, and we're gonna face it.
I strongly believe that the only dams that we have here, especially in Windhoek, is only those ones that were created by the colonial government, that one.
So there was
we haven't created the population is growing. It might come up to the point where the recycled waters will also not be enough.
There won't be enough.
Because I even understand there was a day whereby Coca-Cola and breweries were actually remitted when it comes to their product
because
of the water scarcities.
Yeah, and they get preference to you as a resident. So because their contribution to GDP is more important than you.
Of course.
Yeah?
That is the thing. Yeah. Look, I'm also familiar with Katima.
Yeah.
There's a place called Stone City.
Yeah, I think I know Stone City.
Yeah. Mm. If you go there during the raining season, there's a bridge there, Musa, where the road that goes to Zambia.
Yeah.
If you take your measurement from the normal levels of the river flowing, like now when it stops, the water has gone down.
Mm.
And then you can, one can, if it's not because of hippopotams and crocodiles, one can cross that rivers just walking. A height of 1.6, 1.8. But when it's raining, that water goes to about 15 meter.
Mm.
15 meter. That is how higher does that water raise. There is no an alternative or a plan set up to harvest that water. Because that water goes to Botswana, Zimbabwe, and all those things.
That's why I said there is something.
And then you find out that Katima does not have water.
Yeah.
And it's the same applied to Rundu.
The same applied to, I mean, this is what now they're warning the north that, you know, in months to come, you know, you will have a shortage of water. It same applies to Rundu. the infrastructure, the population growth is outpacing the infrastructure, you know, and nobody thinking about it, in a real time. Yeah?
I'm from Skoto.
Yeah.
Starting from May until now, Skoto have got water crisis.
You see. And the rain just
and then ended. We lose a lot of animals, yeah. Cows,
yeah.
Goats, you know, and we have been crying to the government. You know, sometimes it's these are in other regions the waters are there. Mm. I mean, in other constituencies the waters are there, but there is no water. Mm. I mean, some people might think that because the pipes are there, and then the taps are there, the water is there.
No, it's not.
Whatever.
Yeah.
This is one thing that people have to think. You find politicians say, no, there is water.
Mm.
But I have water at home. But for that tap to fill up a 25 liter,
yeah,
when it's running, it will take me to walk a distance of about 10 kilometers.
Yeah. And it's becoming a regular, to tell the truth, it's becoming a regular in the north, where the water goes,
has got no pressure.
It's gone. Yeah, the water has no pressure. The water are gone for a weekend. And, you know, in the week, you have it twice or three times where you have no water, you know? So it's becoming regular. Yeah.
I was on my way one day, I think it was 2 years ago when the Prime Minister, then Ms. Saraku Wongera, went to a summit in America, I think in Washington, giving a speech that 95% of Namibians are connected to potable water. Now, this is where I say, a scales of a snake.
Yeah. It's not a snake. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Which means Opaipi, your mayor, that pipe for water, for as long as it's there, that is not water. Mm. There's nothing in there. It's just
herbs. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I was even wondering, you know, how is this possible? I realized that it was because of the installations of the pipes across the countries, which are empty.
Yeah.
Which are completely empty.
Which are actually the infrastructure in terms of the government, you know, of the government have put up those infrastructure. But those haven't even reached, you know, to individual houses. You understand?
Of course.
He's talking about how the pipe has been actually put in across the country, but that hasn't reached individual now to have a tap in his house, you know?
Huh? And I have to tell you that even there in my region, as I have observed, 75% of people still walk up to 15 kilometers to 20 kilometers to walk to go and fetch water where there are boreholes and taps.
My friend.
And how much time do they spend there?
Yeah.
4 to 5 hours in order for them to get out. You find people queuing up a distance of about, uh, 300 meters.
Mm.
With those containers waiting for them to get water. Sometimes they left without water because the water completely closed.
Yeah, and I was also looking at NDP-5. And with NDP-5, we should have actually universal water access by 2022. When we talk about universal water access, it means everybody in the country have access to water, to a potable water through the tap. Yeah?
Yeah.
That's what it means.
That is what it means.
Yeah. And
not only a tap, there should be water there. When you open it, it takes you a second for you. Yeah.
And we still have a lot. I mean, Hangwena, you talk about Oshkoto, Omsat, and we talk. We're not even talking about Kavango, and you know. So we still have people queuing up.
When that speech came up, when I was listening to it, I was on my way coming from Katima to Trinity. I meet a girl and I ask her, how long does it take you? I mean, what is the distance? She said, maybe. And then I followed her. And then I calculated with my car, and then I find out I'm going over over 600 to 700 kilometers, following her with her donkey at the water point. And then I ask her, what will you do if one day by accident I bump that donkey of yours?
Yeah.
You see what she gave, the answer that she has given me, it's completely worrisome, my brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. The means of transport to go and fetch water for him.
That's a means of, exactly, that's a means of transport to fetch water. That's no longer there,
I ask schools, they go 6 o'clock, but they go 5 o'clock to schools, and then they come there, and it took them about 4 to 3 hours to get to schools.
There are schools, you know, Hangweno, Msati, that have taps, but there's no water coming through. Huh? let's hear what others have to say, Ben. Yeah.
All right, thank you, Mike.
Great, thanks for coming through. Yeah.
All right.
Oh, 333-66091. These are issues. These are, you know, bread and butter issues. You know, yeah, what do you think? What is your take? You know, as I said, you know, the fifth national development plan promises universal water access by 2022. You know, and we are in 2025. And we have many regions that have no access, that are still queuing up at communal taps. So who's accountable? Why can't we hold? And they still come into us and say it, you know? Why can't we hold people accountable on a document? A document is a promise.
Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, morning, Mike.
Morning. How are you, man?
Good, good. Yeah. Now today you do a journalist work by using the MDB. Yeah, no, that is good. That's what I'm saying. Use their word.
Yeah.
It's where they can know that people, they see their thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is a good way of doing business.
Yeah.
Yeah, not just to say, what we're criticizing out of your, no. Criticize from what they are saying.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. No, that is good. Mm. Yeah. This water scares is, I don't know, but I remember there was a guy from Namuota talking about Okaluheke Watuat the long back.
Yeah.
He said those facilities, they are very old and the parts are no more it's only too modified and it's not pumping the way they wanted in the water to come to Oshagati.
I remember in 2019, you know, those were issues, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those our people, when it comes to innovation or the money, I don't know how they understand it, how to use money and them, the problem is they don't, building up those water storage.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is also a problem because if you look at even in Windhoek, the water storage is for a long time. And if you look at those ones for the in Oshikoto, I think two or three of them. But on your way to Omuthia and up to Oshivelo, I never see a water storage. So they need also to come up with those things. So when there is a raining, they were supposed to pumping that. Until it was storage will be full.
Yeah.
It can take up to 3 months maybe after the water is, the raining stopped.
We waste water, especially here. And it's so surprising when you hear that, you know, sooner you will actually have a problem of water shortage. And there was so much water.
Yeah. That is the problem. We don't want, I'm appreciated really what Guru Nyoma, may rest in peace. He was learning a lot from South Africa.
Yeah,
but as we don't want to rain, as I said, building up those water storage, it is not costing much because it's just a cement that we are getting.
But it should be deeper. A priority. It's not even if it's costing us much. In the end, the situation you will find yourself gonna cost you much.
Because if you look at those storage, then they can supply up to maybe 10 villages. As long as you are pumping in a week, one in a week, it can help. Because if you look at those storage in Windhoek, look at the water, Windhoek water is come from far. It come from that Fontein Dam or what, the one in Okahanya. Yeah, it's the one they get, but them, they come and store it here. And then, because Koriakap Dam is small, it's a capacity of 3.6 million cubic meters. It's a small thing.
Yeah.
So they depending on that one. For a long time, 1950s is where they realized that, no, this dam is nothing compared to the people that want to live in Windhoek and all of that. So they come up with Okahanya, but they have to recycling the water. And that recycling of water is one of the goodest water in the world because since that time up to now, since 1970s, up to now, nobody got sick because of that water. And if you look at other countries like Japan, Singapore, they came to learning about that.
Yeah.
Taking example from us, because Japan is also not getting enough water. It's the same with Singapore. They don't getting enough water for the rain.
Yeah.
So they have also to come. If you're paying your car 20, you're getting 7 units. But this one, you look at what it is. The water will not be running from the tap.
Yeah.
And the Mike, let's hear from others.
All right. Great, man.
So, good morning to you, and welcome. We're talking about water.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the R.
Omutiha with the Kirokaguna, E. Matina, Omjo. Chicago Safana, Nana, Longishifa, Yai, Shirikamoshiwana, E. Moyawa, Otaingo, Botamani, Anagashifa, Yanamibia, Ombitombanawa, Ojika.
Good morning, welcome to Unpacking Today.
Yes, that's Mego, how are you?
I'm fine, and yourself?
We are fine, man. You guys are breaking up a bit in Windhoek.
Oh, we're breaking up.
Yeah, okay.
I think so. We probably have break up sometime.
Yeah, it is now. Yeah, but when you say goodbye, you guys are back.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. All right. My brother, water. Water crisis in Namibia is something else, especially in the Nova.
Yeah, that's it. And it's our own doing. One thing really that we need to, very, very, very important is that infrastructure hasn't changed. Some of this infrastructure has been actually built, we talk about 60 or 50 years ago, or even some 100 years ago.
Yeah.
You know? No, seriously. And the population have grown. Yeah.
Mm. And then we are not changing and we are not upgrading even.
And nothing has been upgraded. I mean, we have been talking about the issue in Rundu just 2 days ago. Eh?
Yeah.
The population have grown and nothing has been changed.
Nothing is changing.
Yeah. And
they say when it comes to the north, like now we're having homestays. where everybody's digging is what? On to put your pipelines.
Yeah.
And just imagine, let me say you're having like a 50 house lining in 25 milliliter hose pipe. That's why now, and everybody's connected.
Yeah. And in different directions, my dear.
I'm telling you.
There is no order. If you go to those areas, there is water flowing everywhere. Pipes are just what, you know.
Busting somewhere. I'm telling you.
Are leaking all over. Huh?
Mm. The thing is for me, what I'm seeing is that we have people who are not serious. Because remember one thing, like in Elanda Fidi, I think we only have like two, if I'm not mistaken, tolling. Let them say three. Because there's one in Onga, Osho, and then Omafo, and then Wangwena itself. But the capacity, they are small.
Yeah.
They cannot keep up with what? Development of town like Elanda Fidi.
Yeah.
We need another big one. But I'm telling you, they are, like now, you open, like, let them say now we are like a house where we are following each other. Mike, mine. Yeah, maybe for Petrus and Simon. Okay, starting from Mike. Maybe saving a water bit to fill up 25 liter, like in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, they come to me. It will take me like 15 minutes to fill up that.
Yeah.
And Simon, it's going like maybe
the further
even
you are,
even an hour.
So the further you are, the less pressure.
I'm telling you, it's like that.
Yeah, comes to you.
I'm telling you, once you open together, I'm telling you, Simon and Petrus, they are not going to save. Me, I will save, but it's going like maybe for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Because it's dotting. My friend, it's a mess. And I don't know when we are talking about we have engineers, we have what, architects and what. What they are doing in those towns?
Yeah.
When it comes to development of like infrastructure, like waters, and sanitation.
Mm.
I'm telling you, things are not, they cannot keep up because people are flocking to town, they have become more, building have been built, but the infrastructure of when it comes to water is still the same. The other guy is saying even 1960, maybe 1960 even in area.
Yeah.
Like that one for Angwen, I think, is somewhere around what? 1940.
Yeah.
The one which I'm talking referring to Angwen itself. And near to Oponofi. I'm telling you, up to now.
Even the Otapi plant, it took years. How many years have we have been hearing that? You know?
Huh? Yeah. Hmm? You see? This is a thing I'm telling you that we are not serious. And we cannot really blame to Namu Water alone because there's a government who's supposed to hold Namu Water accountability.
No, the other thing is the whole question of how the non-payment and non-payment, as we talk about, this is actually the ministry and this big, the parastatals of the government that are not paying. Yeah?
Exactly.
That are not paying Namu Water to be able to do what they need to do, you know?
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I'm telling my brother, just imagine, like now, we are landing out of water. We are saying there will be a crash of water. Then you find yourself in what? Engla Hospital or Jibo. Then what do you expect those people to go and to fetch water in the F dam?
Yeah.
Which are not yet treated. Or how? Because we have some perennial dam, which is like in Omafo.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they cannot do something about that dam. That dam, I'm telling you, since we are small up to now, I never see it dry.
But it's not improved in a way that it can store some water.
They are not even, nobody even paying attention. Yeah. What did they do? This guy was making what? Bricks. They are the one who are using those waters. Without even get charged by our municipality. But just imagine, if you improve that dam to standard, and these people are coming to fetch water there to make bricks, at least you check them.
Yeah.
But nothing.
The other thing, as I said, the other thing is there isn't even any review. You don't even hear any review why why haven't we reached, because as I said, in NDP 5, we actually promised to have universal access to water by 2022.
But now that's what we are in.
How far are we? Even if we are not even probably half of the population.
I'm telling you.
So, but we're moving on as if all is well.
If you want to see development, just move from Congo, Congo village town, cancer.
My friend.
Like in those around there. Then you can see, my friend, even water. You don't know if this water is bronze or what. You can't even recall the color.
Yeah.
And to make a matter worse even, the water is too salty. I'm telling you, but people are just drinking normal, but if you are
Joe,
you're even wondering if you drink with this water, where I'm going to end up. Not even in Okongo hospital, maybe in Oshakati.
Yeah.
And you've been referred to Windhoek. I'm telling you. But the problem is that I don't know why we are not even thinking of F them. We are able to cater those waters, and we are able to treat that water. But the problem is that our government, we are looking at where we have to channel water. Even the current president was talking about even to take water from Congo.
Yeah.
Just imagine. How far is it? And, but having an aquafin in Angwena, why we not just develop that one?
Yeah.
And we start channeling water everywhere. Because you can tell me people in Oskoto are dying for thirsty. But Angwena, which is having a lot of underground, and people are talking about that water can even go for 500 years.
Yeah.
But what are we doing? We are quiet.
For me, I always said, there are certain things that we don't need to be political. There are things you can, waffle, say, make a lot of promise about, but things, there are some basic needs that you don't have to be very political. Because it's, those are things about, it's a matter of dignity, it's a matter of health, it's a matter of development, you know?
Yeah.
And now when you make these, promises, and even when you're talking about development, it's something that we need to look at serious. You can just talk as much as you want, but if you don't have water, yesterday we talked about electricity.
Electricity, yeah.
If you don't have these two things,
That's basic.
Forget about it. Forget development.
And this is what I'm saying. How long are we going to stay this way? We are talking about things which we're supposed to deal with in 5 years when we get independent. Then we are here after 35. We're still talking the same thing. We are going to provide you basic need like water, electricity, housing. Come on, man. People are there talking about other things which are to do with even technology. Things with to do even with what? Going to space. When are we going to talk about that one? If you are here struggling with talking about basic thing with the other country they deal it with in 1960.
Yeah.
But we are here and we want to keep up with the world. How? If we're still having a problem with housing. In Namibia, we're still having a problem with water, electricity. And you are there, you want to compete with other people talking about space, going to space. How?
Yeah.
If your people are still dying for thirsty. This is a problem, I'm telling you. And when we are talking about these things, some people, they say, no, we like too much criticizing the government. Government are doing, but seriously, other countries are thinking for something else.
No.
Maybe they are even thinking of how to create a space where they will have to travel, like even you are taking a taxi, like what is happening to Rwanda.
But
we are here crying for water. My friend, it's our own doing. It's what I'm saying. Country don't, we don't learn country with theory. We learn it with practical. The good example we learn is from Germany. How they turn their VTC to do practical things.
Yeah.
Not the field which we are doing here, and our VTC are graduated, they're only given the tools. They're They're not even equipped with money.
Yeah.
So they go and start and employ others. You're only giving the tools? What are you going to do with the tools if you don't have the finance to start with?
Yeah.
Ah, man, it's a problem, Mike. Seriously. Okay, let me give other people a chance.
All right, man. Thanks for coming through, yeah?
All right.
Mm. 0833-66091. 0833-66091. Yeah. So, you know what? You know, and this part, this is something from us, from, and I have from why, and probably that's why, Mr. Walenga put up something like this, a platform like this. We want to sensitize, community for you to demand what is your right. You understand? For you to know exactly, give you information and to sensitize you to demand. Eh? What about, what if you're sitting in anywhere, you know, Tapi or in anywhere in any of the place where you find yourself? The country has been independent for how long? Other people are enjoying, they have taps, they have whatever, they have water, they have access to clean water, and you still walking 8 to 10, 15 kilometers to go and fetch water. Just water. You don't, let alone talk about electricity, light. Eh? So for those of us maybe in a comfortable, we stop seeing our brothers and sisters who are not actually have access to what we have. Eh? And normally that happens. So, and it's happened once you moved up. Eh? Once sometime you have someone who is actually, you know, advocate, you know, the right for people. Once they sit in the parliament, they're looking for their own perk, you know? They have already forgotten. Eh? They have already forgotten. Hmm? And we try to create, you know, a way where we can justify something. This is about dignity, to tell you the truth. This is about dignity. This is about, you know, as I said, it's about dignity. It's about health, especially when it comes to the issue of a shortage of waters. It's about development. Eh? So, and you have a right to participate. One of that is participating in making sure, if you have a voice in your community. Hmm? Otherwise, you stay where you are. Maybe you deserve to be where you are. Now I'm turning it to you. You deserve where you are because you think, okay, all is well. Okay, good. Then it's good for you. Then it's good for you. All right. So, good morning to you, wherever you find yourself. And this is Unpacking the Day. So, and if you want to come through, 0833-66091. 19 minutes past the hour of 9. We go until 10 o'clock. All right. Let me get to the second story. All right. I think we have exhausted a bit of, you're most welcome. I mean, you're most welcome to come through, our first story. Yeah. Just maybe, you know, wrapping up, you know, there is, you know, the looming water squeeze in the north, you know, it's not just actually a natural disaster. It really mirrors, reflecting how we manage our most precious resource, which is actually water. So, and yes, the rain have come, but rain alone won't save us. The rain alone won't save us. System will. You understand? Rain alone won't save us. System will. Accountability will. Innovation will. You know, those are the things that will save us. Not rain alone. And we are admitting to it that it's unpredictable nowadays. But we still fail to plan. We still fail to manage our resources better. And maybe next time NamWater issue a warning
It won't be about shortages, you know, but about how Namibia finally learn to make every drop count. Eh? So maybe that will be the warning. Eh? All right. So let's get to our, so we leave that alone, but you're most welcome to come through. And if you really want to say a thing or two, or even share your experience in your own town. All right. So you're still on Unpacking the Day, where we normally dive deep into the latest, breaking down the facts, and then get you thinking about the world around us, around you. Now, in this segment, we are looking at a warning also. So we were looking at the NamWater warning. Now we're going to look at a warning from the Petroleum Training Institute, which is sounding the alarm on Africa oil reserves. All right. So let's get to something else now. Now, the message is very clear here. The warning is very clear. Africa risk its vast oil resources becoming, as they call it, stranded asset. You know, we actually risking our vast oil resources becoming stranded asset. That is, resources that cannot be used economically due to a lack of technology to extract them out efficiently and cleanly. You know, we lack those technology. All right? So, now, the second part of this conversation is about Namibia itself, okay? The Rhino Resources, a company drilling off our shores, is facing a major decision, like many other companies, like many other majors. Is it a time to move forward with commercial oil production, or are we still too uncertain about what is really down there in the Orange Basin? So that's the second part of this story. So we will be unpacking these stories now and see where they intersect or maybe where they don't. All right. Now, so let's have a little bit of a background. Okay, Africa has an estimate 125 billion barrels of oil. Billion barrels of oil, you know, under the surface. All right. Now, that's a lot of potential wealth. A lot of potential wealth. Also, maybe that's what we think. So, now, but as a global attention now shift more towards renewable energy and reducing carbon emissions, these reserves could end up as what they call a stranded asset. Essentially, they could become worthless. Now, this is a challenge Africa is facing across the board. So this is not only about Namibia, but this is the challenge Africa is facing across the board. The continent, it's rich in soil. Rich in oil, not in soil. So yeah, we're also rich in soil. So rich in oil has yet to develop the technology and infrastructure needed. We are yet to develop the technology and infrastructure needed to extract it, to extract the oil cleanly and efficiently. So, a report from the Petroleum Training Institute in Nigeria warns that now, without a rapid upgrading to local innovation, this oil reserve might remain untapped, or worse, become financial burden rather than asset, actually. So, we are talking about a severe dependence on foreign technology. So Africa, despite its vast natural resources, still relies heavily on international companies for everything. for exploration and to a refinery, to refining, you know. We rely on international companies. We don't have, you know, our own, you know, technology and infrastructure to do this. And this is what they're warning now, that, well, as now, without, if we don't have these, the Institute is warning that without a rapid upgrade to local, you know, to local innovation, this oil reserves might really remain untapped. Or, as I said, even worse, that become a financial burden rather than actually an asset, because the foreign companies are the ones that have to do that, and we don't benefit anything. So everything, they said, everything depending on international companies. Now, and these companies now, and these companies increasingly, they are worried of the climate change movement. Yeah? So because of that, they are pulling back from investing in fossil fuel. So as global investment in fossil energy dries up, slowly by slowly dries up, Africa's oil sector is left actually scrambling to keep up. So we left scrambling to keep up. So the Institute take an example of Ghana as an example. So the local content policy was supposed to make the oil sector more self-sufficient in Ghana, but study shows that these policies haven't led to a meaningful technology transfer in Ghana. Possibly the same thing in Angola or Nigeria. So it is like, you know, it's like you're building a house without the right tools. You know, you have got the land, but no means to make the most of it. You have the land, but you don't have means, you know, to make most of it. So it's the same thing. We get the resource, but we don't have the means to make most of it. This is what the Institute is saying. So this technological gap means that African countries risk falling behind in a world where now the focus is rapidly shifting towards a cleaner, a greener alternatives. Yeah? So because of that gap, that's technological gaps, means that we are actually falling behind. And this brings us to a very, very crucial point. Now, the crucial point is what happened then to the 125 billion worth of oil Africa, you know, in Africa. If Africa can't develop the tech, yeah, can't develop the technology to pull it out of the ground, what would happen? So, one is that we, of course, for now, we would rely on the foreign companies to do that. And you're still not benefiting much more. Eh? And that's what the institution is saying. The technological gap means that African country risk falling behind, you know, in a world now that is actually starting to, you know, shift towards greener alternatives. So without that, it becomes another example of Africa's resources being exploited by foreign players, you know, without really benefit flowing back to the continent. But well, there is a hope. There is a hope, though. There is a hope. Now, but the hope is in, it's where now the experts are saying, like, we need more investment in local innovation. Okay? If there's more investment in local innovation, and if there's more regional cooperation. And the idea is very simple. Instead of relying on foreign firms, Africa should look within. Now, But what we say, even when they say Africa should look within, we're talking, it's a little bit of contradicting itself, because this is the gap that he's talking about. So we're saying about strengthen local petroleum research centers, creating synergies between countries, maybe countries that already have been doing this, like Nigeria, Angola, Gabon, you know. It's about creating an ecosystem that can compete globally and reduce, at the same time, reduce emission at the same time. So that's on a continental level. Now let's come back home. Let's quickly come back before I let you come through. So let's come to Namibia, in our own backyard. So there is this story. Namibia, a relatively new player. We are a relatively new player in the oil game, and is sitting on a potential. We are sitting on the potential oil and gas reserve of the coast, of our coastal in the Orange Basin. So now, there is this Rhino Resource Company, a company exploring reserves in these reserves. So the company is exploring these reserves. And it's about to start a new drilling and testing campaign to determine whether the oil there can be commercially viable. We have heard that before, you know. So we know the process now. We know the drill now. And at one point, Shell said, well, they are not commercially viable. So this is the process now. And this is the process other majors as well are looking now, analyzing data now, you know, technical data now to decide. Now, the stakes is very higher. So the stakes here are higher. Now, Rhino is aiming now to confirm the commercial potential of two key discoveries, the Capricornus, prospect where there's a sign of a light oil have been found. So, and there's also Volans prospect, the Volans prospect, which contain gas condensates. So now the test being conducted will give a clear picture of whether these fields are worth developing. Now the company hopes to begin production now. Like many of the companies, you know, by next year, they will be, some of them will actually then decide whether they will invest the final investment decisions. So the company hope now to begin production by 2030. So, I mean, using the technology called FPSO, floating production, storage, and offloading. So, which allow oil to be extracted offshore out of the side of land, you know? So, but here is where now the uncertainty lies, okay? While the discoveries are promising, and think of other majors as well, Rhino is not rushing in. They are waiting for the more, for more technical data. You know, they are waiting for more technical data. They are still actually trying to understand the pressure, the temperature, the composition of the oil and gas down there. So they're still actually looking at all this. And this is a critical phase in determining now whether the fields are truly viable or if it is just another pipe dream, you know? So, yeah, and as I said, these are what many major are going through at the moment. And that's why last time we talked about that the investment has actually slowed down because many of these major are now actually at this process, all right? So this cautious approach, it does make sense for major company like that. Namibia oil industry is still actually in its infancy. So that's we need to understand. We are not talking about a full established, you know, many years old oil field like you see in other parts of Africa. So we're still at our infancy. So, and here's the thing. So the oil price, this is also things that you have to think like these guys are thinking, you know, these majors are thinking. So the oil price volatility, you know, we have seen over the last decades, over the last years, along with increasing pressure of sustainable energy. Remember now that people are talking about, you know, shifting transition to greener energy. So means any large investment could be a gamble. Do you understand? So it means, and this is what the article is trying to also highlight. So if the oil reserves are not up to par, Namibia risks losing out on what could have been a major economic windfall. You know? So, and sometime, and this is very important also for you to understand, we have to be careful how do we communicate this. And some, you know, where are we now? Anything could happen. There hasn't been any major now have already made that final, you know, decision, the final investment decisions. Yes, we can be optimistic. Eh? So as I said, the question is, you need to think like some of these companies. Eh? So where you ask, is it wise for Namibia maybe to continue investing in oil exploration? It's a serious question to think about. Or should we focus on other renewable energy alternatives? Eh? It is a serious question to think about. So, some argue, because there are those who argue that oil, even if it is there, might not be the long-term solution we think it is. So, it might not be a long-term solution we think it is. One thing, as we're talking about lack of technology and upgrade of infrastructure, that means we would depend on foreign companies, you know. Well, of course, in terms of, you know, tax and levy and all that, and royalty, the government would get revenue from that. So, but would it definitely as a resource benefit, you know, every Namibian? You know, in the way you can say, well, if we're getting all this, then this can trickle to, you know, social services. So you have some argue that oil, even if it's there, might not be long-term solution. We think maybe it is. And on the other hand, Namibia also is a country that needs economic growth and jobs right now. And oil could provide that now, for now. So why don't we make use of it? Eh? So what does all this mean for Namibia and Africa as a whole, really? So let's just wrap that up now. Now, first, we see that Africa's oil sector is at the intersection, if you like. We have the resources, but we also have a significant challenges. If we fail to upgrade technology, build local capacity, and take part in the global shift towards low carbon solution, we risk actually falling behind. Eh? Now, the oil could be there, but it might not be able to unlock its true potential. It might not be. And even those who are in the position of leadership have to be careful how they communicate that. So you may actually draw this hope. We may actually create this hope and actually not be able to live up to that. Because first of all, one has to think, it doesn't depend on you. Well, the government can decide to approve or not to approve, but, you know, much of that depends on investment. And remember some of the things that we have discussed so far. So the challenge that we have discussed so far. For Namibia, it's an opportunity, but also a challenge. Yes, there's oil in the Orange Basin, but will it pay off? Are we ready to invest in the necessary technology? And are we prepared for the possibility that the global market might not be as eager to buy fossil fuel as it once was in 10 years from now on? So those are challenges, and those are real challenges. But one thing is very clear. And this is very, very, very clear. Africa and Namibia need to think long term. We really need to think long term. The era of fossil fuels is not over, you know, from many people that you're talking to. It's not over. But one thing that is very clear is that it's changing. Okay? It is changing. So if we are not careful, those resources could remain, as they say now, as the article put it, trapped underground like a buried treasure that no one can get to. So you are welcome now to come through. So you were knocking on my door earlier. So you can come through and have your say on this one as well. So Africa Oil Reserve, it really faces a big question. Will they become stranded asset, you know, or of future resources? So that's a question. And Namibia, are we still on fence? Are we still on fence? Cautiously exploring our options. But one thing is certain. As I said, one thing is certain. We must be strategic. We must be strategic. The future of oil in Namibia and Africa will depend on how quickly we adapt to changing global dynamics, because it's changing. So what do you think? Should Namibia push forward with oil exploration, or is it time to look elsewhere for sustainable solution? Maybe you have to look somewhere for sustainable solution. Well, let's know what is on your mind. 08333 66091. Okay, 08333 66091. So yes, our time is about 43 minutes past the hour of 9. We still have about 17 minutes. We have enough for you to come through. 08 08333 66091.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Yes, good morning, good morning, good morning. And wherever you find yourself, or good morning, good afternoon, good evening, because I'm talking to you wherever you find yourself. And I can only talk to you if you're connected to Eagle FM. And the best way to do that is to download, man, to download that Eagle FM, you know, Eagle FM mobile app. Once you download that, you can go anywhere. You know, you can go to Fiji, you can go to, what is the other country? You can go to Myanmar. You can go anywhere. You will be able, as long as you're connected, you know, you'll be able to listen to Eagle FM wherever you find yourself. Or you can be in deep rural somewhere in Namibia, eh? So you can still be able to connect to Eagle FM. Do that now. All right.
Very good morning to you. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. And yourself?
Fine.
Yep.
Yes. Yes. For us, there's nothing really to fear.
Are you sure about that?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So if we are to invest in all the best areas, is still fine. Because one, we don't, our emission to the environment, I think it's just measured 0.1 something percent. So 0.1 or 2, somewhere there. So for us, we can combine those areas and then we can still benefit. Maybe the only issue is to invest more on that part. Otherwise, for us, we can make progress on the fossil water, we are calling it, and the other things. So I don't think there's any need just for us to encourage our children, those who are going for those courses, science courses, so that they can help us in future to sustain our capacity. Otherwise, for us, I think we are definitely in a good track. I don't think we need to worry, but those people who are financing, maybe climate financing, maybe that's where we have a serious problem, because most of these people who are contributing to the destruction of the...
There's also other noise, man. It doesn't sound good on our side. Yeah.
Oh, well, no, I think it's just a tough bite.
Yeah.
Yeah, for us, we just mobilize for more resources and those to convince those people to pay to finance those projects.
Yeah.
Because they are the ones who are causing those damage.
Right.
Thank you.
All right.
Good.
A very good morning to you. Our time is about 48 minutes. I'm taking you back a little bit. So 48 minutes past the hour of 9. And, we go until 10 o'clock. So, and it has been great so far. So good morning and welcome. You're welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yeah, Mr. Mike, morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, do you know what is powering the U.S. dollar?
Do I know what is powering the U.S. dollar?
Yes.
Oil?
From the 1970s,
yeah,
the U.S. dollar became petrol dollar.
yeah, it's true. That's true, yeah.
Yeah, so the U.S. dollar will collapse immediately. The moment fossil oil, plunges. The moment the sale of oil, plunges.
Yeah.
That will be the end of the U.S. dollar. So, and America will not allow that yet. Because the U.S. dollar has been, part of their strong arm.
Yeah, the oil, yeah.
Yes.
And that's why they want strategically to be in the Middle East.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, think about this. Most economists are talking about, switching to the so-called green energy.
Yeah.
And then they are using Albania as an example, that Albania is completely done that, so we can do the same. But they are not considering, they are not considerate of the fact that who is Albania in terms of industrialization? Albania does not have any influence or power when it comes to industrial power.
Yeah.
So, if you tell me that China is switched to green energy, or, the U.S. or Germany, that will be a powerful shift. But none of those, major countries have switched to the so-called green energy because it does not yet have the capacity to run industry.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's we still have a long way.
Yeah, the other point maybe that that institute is actually talking about is the technological gap. So that if we fail to upgrade the technology and build local capacity, and we as Africans should then be able to take part in the global also. Take part in that global shift towards that low carbon solutions. So if
If we don't do that, we risk actually falling behind. So, and the challenge would be also that because of our reliant in terms of technology and expert from and infrastructure from foreign companies, we may not actually, this might not really benefit us as we would love, as we would like to.
Exactly, but this is on both. Look, even if you switch to green energy today, you don't have the technological know-how.
Yeah.
But you does not mean this is only focused on oil. This is also when you talk about, you know, green energy.
Yeah.
You also still need expertise from outside.
And technology as well.
You still need the technology.
Mm.
And even if you have the technology, you still need the human resource in terms of the know-how on how to operate the technology and make it, usable for the beneficiation of the
of the
resources.
Yeah.
But so Africa is in between. Africa is in between because we have wasted too so much time.
Yeah.
In theories. So we are in between, and I don't know whether we can really be at a faster pace to catch up.
Yeah,
when our education system is still in the basics.
Yeah, actually very, very far, far basic.
So catching up is very difficult because our economy is not knowledge based. Our education is also not knowledge driven. Education is more of paper, oriented.
Yeah.
As long as I get the paper.
Yeah.
And that's why even our employment sector is not skill driven. So that's a problem. You have in Africa as a whole, not just Namibia, but just Africa as itself.
I given an example, like we like having a land, but we have no tools how to make use of that land. You know, when we come now to these resources, whether you can talk about green hydrogen, we're talking about oil, you're talking about, so it's like having a land, but you don't have tools how to make use of that land. Yeah.
Yeah, because our focus is the one that is misplaced. We have a misplaced focus.
Yeah.
You know, we have misplaced our priorities. We are still talking about somebody who is 92 who still want to cling in power. In one of the, oil-rich countries.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have a problem because by the time we woke up from the slumber, other people already established economic institutions that are now biting our backs. And we didn't have the capacity to negotiate at our term because we were caught off guard.
Yeah, it's true.
We were caught off guard and we were only told, look, it was just Mozambique and Angola and Zambia that were under pressure to make sure that the Chimurenga ANC and who are kicked out of those countries.
Yeah.
And so there was no time for SWAPO, ANC, and others to prepare for the coming meeting. So people were caught off guard and resigned. So it's not just about SWAPO, just even Ghana that, got independent earlier.
Mm.
Where are they today? They are still beginning. They are still starting to be industrialized. So all this institutionalized, economical, colonization, it is deliberately by design. And we have also a major role that we played in all that.
Yeah.
So it's a sad thing when you look at it really. But other countries are taking advantage of the global shift.
Yeah.
And they are using it to benefit their countries. Because if you look at America now, it's very much unpredictable even when it comes to their own allies.
Mm.
because America has realized, look, it's important for America to fight for their own, for what benefits America first.
Yeah. Mm.
So the Trump America First is criticized by many. But from my viewpoint, I see it as a waking up. So, but the only problem will be if somebody else comes into power and discontinues that, then it becomes a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, but as for us, we cannot do what the Iranian did. We cannot do what the Saudis did.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that we cannot imitate the Qataris. We see other countries that have risen to become, you know, not only global oil producers, but, you know, also participating on the technological advancement stage. We see all that, but we don't want to go that route to imitate them, because we Africans are afraid of radical decisions.
Yeah.
We want to be known as a continent that keeps international laws and norms. We want to be rated as great by rating agencies, which contribute nothing to our economy.
There was a time I asked Mrs. Cornelia Shilunga, she was on the show, and I asked the government is confident in talking about the possibility, in the way you're talking about the possibility of oil productions, while up to now we don't have the majors committing, we don't have any majors that have made that final investment decisions. So in the way we speak and creating that hope, do you think maybe in the way we speak, especially those in politics, create the right impression of where we're going? Or should we be, we should tone a little bit until, you know, we know for sure there are majors who are committing to that?
You see, what is surprising in this decade that we are living in, there's no major push for oil discovery.
Yeah.
Because they are already countries that have the largest oil, both output and input in the world,
Yeah.
So there's no major shift like in the 70s when there was a competition between the East and the West.
Mm.
And that is what is a little bit, you know, destabilizing our hope. Into becoming one of the oil producers, because there is no international push for countries to come and commit to that, because there is already, you know, there's a little number, quite a number of countries that are coming, are filling the gap, and, you know, that are producing, that have the largest output, and all that. So, I think the government needs to, apart from talking, yes, talking is good, but I think they need to sit down and think about the strategy on how to convince, they can convince majors like, you know, like China and maybe the U.S. especially, because the U.S. imports 13 million barrels of oil per day, but their consumption is 20 million barrels per day.
Yeah.
So now, the U.S. will need around 20 million to consume on a day, and then 13 million to export. So the countries like America is the one that can maybe come and tap into the oil as America. But then does America have that push?
Mm.
Because they can tap from everywhere. So do they have that such a push?
Yeah.
They have enough of LNG that they can sell, and also they have enough countries where they can tap LNG, countries like, you know, Libya and Iraq, which are in total chaos.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's any push for any country right now to really commit desperately, like they were in the 70s.
In 70s, yeah. Mm.
Yes.
All right. Yes, it's about 1 minute past the hour of 10. So, Tour de France, what are we, what can we expect in Kuthamosa before I hand it, I hand the mic over to you? What we can expect?
In fact, just a breakdown of all that in Oshiwambo.
Yeah.
The people can just tune in. We are going to have a breakdown of a lot of stories.
Yeah.
That are making headlines that are of economic interest.
All right. So, all right. So I will be handing over to you in a minute. Let me say my goodbyes and I will hand over to you. So bye for now.
Bye.
All right. Let's bring us to the end of the, of unpacking the day. And that was Tate France. So make sure that you stay tuned, because he will be taking over with Kuthamosha right away. Thank you for those who come through, to this morning, and for your contribution. And remember, this is why we exist. This is why this program exists, for you and the next program that is coming up. Make sure that you participate. You air your opinion, your thoughts, say your mind. All right. So, well, let's do this again tomorrow. You know, here, right here on your favorite talk radio station. My name is Mike Oshoveli, and I will leave you in capable hand of Tate France. For me, until tomorrow then, goodbye for now.